This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood for a little improvisation, a Latin music blowout, or a celebration with a focus on recycling. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. When it comes to music, New Orleans is known around the world for improvisational jazz. But does improvisation influence the other arts? That's the focus of a three-day conference presented by the Fertel Foundation and others as the city's tricentennial year comes to a close. It's called Improvisation, New Orleans' Gift to the Modern World. Conference organizer Randy Fertel joins us. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
What was the inspiration for the conference?
Well, I wrote a book about improvisation. I call my book A Taste for Chaos because I'm arguing that improvisers give us a taste. They have a taste for chaos, but that's not where they end up. They end up with a new order, and an order that emerges organically from the material. It's mostly an academic book, but I think the ideas are too important to leave to the academics alone. After all, we have an improviser in the White House now, and some of the things that go on in artistic improvisation that appeal to authenticity because it's spontaneous is going on now in the rhetoric coming out of the White House. So I think it's really important to explore this.
Let's talk about your definition of improvisation and how you are exploring its connection to the arts outside of music.
I go at it a little differently than some. I don't want to split hairs over whether a work of art is truly improvised. Everything we do is part improvised and part prepared. What's interesting is how many artists make a point of saying that it's impromptu, spontaneous, careless, came from a dream, was influenced by drugs or alcohol, or, you know, Faulkner says all he needs to write a book is some tobacco, some bourbon, and a room. So in bourbon veritas. So what's interesting is if you stop splitting hairs about, is it really improvised, you realize, oh, the claim of spontaneity, of carelessness, is a way of challenging care and rationality. It's a way of saying, well, virtuosity and mastery of your craft don't always get you all the way home. You want that art beyond the reach of art. You want something more. And to look at improv, I think it's fun to be here inside the arts because to look at this is to peer inside the arts. This is what the arts are all about. This is where art starts, in that leap beyond mere mastery, mere craft. So this is kind of a window into the mystery of creation, I think.
Are you talking about some sort of tension?
The great improvisations, from Wordsworth to Rabelais to Montaigne to Huckleberry Finn, there's a tension between form and formlessness. There's a claim of formlessness. For example, in Huckleberry Finn, Mark Twain claims in his epilogue, the quotation that begins the book, he says, "Persons attempting to find a motive in this narrative will be prosecuted. Persons attempting to find a moral in it will be banished. Persons attempting to find a plot will be shot." You know, this is just a formless, fun narrative. There's nothing to it. And yet the way that that statement is shaped is very formal. Plot, shot, every clause is exactly the same shape. And Huckleberry Finn says he goes a good deal on instinct, like our president does, and it gets him in a lot of trouble. You know, there's the problem of the ending of Huckleberry Finn, which a lot of people blame Mark Twain for, that Huckleberry Finn goes along with his friend Tom Sawyer in the abuse of the slave Jim at the end. But maybe that's Mark Twain's point, that going on instinct doesn't always get you home, doesn't get you to real moral action. And so carelessness is not only a formal stylistic thing, but also a moral issue. It's true in The Great Gatsby, too. In the first party at Gatsby's house, the conductor of the jazz orchestra who's playing at the party says that he's going to play the jazz encyclopedia of the world. It was composed by a conductor Tostov, which sounds like a good Russian composer, but it's a play on Tostov, careless, impromptu.
As in tossed off.
Tossed off. And he chuckles. He says something about how the uptown stuff shirts are really going to enjoy this, and he laughs. And then the people dance and swoon to this music. And they are moved by this tossed off music to be careless. And Fitzgerald describes women falling into the arms of men as if falling into arms of men wasn't dangerous. It's interesting the way this stylistic trope becomes a moral issue.
How will the conference unfold? What's on tap?
Well, we start with a culinary session with Alice Waters, who brought her edible schoolyard here after Katrina. She's the founder of Chez Panisse. Davy Nelson, the kitchen sister from NPR. Ben Burkett, a Mississippi farmer, activist, and native-born Richard McCarthy, who founded our Crescent City Farmers Market and now runs Slow Food USA. You might ask, what do you mean culinary improv? And my answer is simple. When we make a gumbo in New Orleans, what do? We start with form. We start with family recipe. Who dares say that's not a virtuosic recipe? But then we look to see what's in the cupboard or the refrigerator or the bayou or the woods, and we improvise on that. So there's that tension between form and formlessness. And it's always about being ready. Impromptu means at the ready. And improvise comes from a word meaning not foreseen. The improviser is always ready for the occasion. We have participants who are both improvisers themselves, and their subject matter will also involve trying to make these links among the arts that we're proposing are there. For example, our final session is about politics, and we have Matt Worker, who's the political cartoonist for Politico. We have Gwen Tompkins, your own Gwen Tompkins, whose art of the interview has to be at the ready. We also have a long-form theater session, Chris Kamenstein of Goat in the Road Theater. Then we have visual arts with Mel Chin, a major deal in the art world. He just made a big splash in Times Square. Along with him, there'll be Theo Eliezer, who's a local young woman who works as art director for Mama Tried magazine. We have Stephen Nachmanovich, who is a wonderful writer, wrote a great book, Free Play, Improvisation in Life and Art. He is the closest thing we will have to someone trying to teach you how to improvise. He gives talks with his violin in hand and goes back and forth between talking and playing. Rob Wallace, another literary scholar, he wrote a great book on spontaneity in the modern era. We'll be exploring improvisation in Bohemian New Orleans. Jenna Sherry will do a masterclass on classical music. And there are two NOCA professors who will be giving a jazz masterclass.
Will we have a different appreciation of our city and her gift to the world after this experience?
If there's a time and place that made the word improvisation part of the lexicon, part of the vernacular, it's New Orleans in the jazz age. But we are exploring the word and the art beyond New Orleans. And I think that the deeper appreciation is, for example, what if Louis Armstrong is tapping into something that goes back to antiquity?
Conference organizer and author Randy Furtell, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Improvisation, New Orleans' Gift to the Modern World. A tricentennial conference runs November 30th through December 3rd in venues in and around the French Quarter. More info at improvconferencenola.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Award-winning multidisciplinary artist Jose Torres-Tama is back with exciting news. His Taco Truck Theater is the subject of a new documentary, This Taco Truck Kills Fascists. It screened at this year's New Orleans Film Fest and won Best Louisiana Feature. The documentary by Chilean filmmaker Rodrigo Dorfman will rescreen at the third annual Latin Music All-Stars Concert. Jose, congratulations.
Gracias, Diane. You know, one thing I tell people is to work on a theater project for 5 years, right? Give birth to that with this amazing ensemble. And another is to have a brilliant filmmaker like Rodrigo create this hybrid genre documentary in another form that makes it live even further. The Best Louisiana Feature Film Award was a total surprise. you know, Rodrigo, first of all, reached out to me and said, hey, I'm not even sure whether we're actually in any competition category. I was hoping that we would be in the documentary category. But you go on, go to the film festival. I never win any awards. My documentaries are much more hybrid genre. They're much more experimental than regular documentaries. And I was like, all right, I'll go. And I'm there, and, you know, it's at that beautiful jazz market on O.C. Haley, and the crowd is there. Everyone's receiving all kinds of awards. But there's a lack of coffee. And I have a terrible coffee addiction. And it began at 11, and they were really functional in getting everything on time. There's about 200-something people, and it's like 12:30 now. And it ends around 1 o'clock, and finally someone taps me and says, hey, the coffee's back. And I'm like, great, I went out there. I was downing my second cup, and someone taps me on the shoulder and says, yo, your film just won an award. I was like, award? What award? And I walk in, and then people start applauding. You know, it's one of those moments where you're really quite ecstatic, and the only thing I could think of on the way there to the stage area when they had projected the film screening image of my two boys, Darius and Diego Torres Copeland, who played the taco truck Avengers. The film does have this sci-fi Latino noir genre bent to it. And the only thing I could think of was, like, I got to remember everyone's name.
Yeah, you got to get everybody's name right.
Everybody's name right. I got to remember the ensemble. I got to thank the, you know, do as much as I can, right?
So let's do a little bit of the backstory. This was a gift of a truck that has now brought your dream of a radical traveling dinner theater to new heights.
It's amazing because the truck was offered by the 501c3 commissioner, Living Arts of Tulsa. Really needs a lot of kudos for that. It was donated. It was 2003 GMC truck. And we had received funding to transform it. The truck didn't actually move when we first, when it was first donated. So yeah, it's that comet tragedy kind of thing, right? So it didn't move, and we put money into it to get it started. And I drove it from Tulsa all the way here back in January of 2017. Rodrigo had known about the project, and he wanted to be part of it. So he came, began documenting, and I began reforming the ensemble. So the truck is now in full-fledged form. We were in Minneapolis in May and sold out a 120-seat theater with about 140 people there because we performed part of the project outdoors, and then we migrate inside the theater. And the traveling trio that comes with me is Spirit McIntyre on cello, a poet, performer, a brilliant super being, and then Roberto Carrillo, who is the Mexican performer who plays the zompoñas, the panpipes, the charango, all these hybrid Andean instruments. So now the project is moving forward. The film has created a lot of interest, and we're hoping to continue the national tour. So Rodrigo created a very hybrid genre, inventive documentary that really captures performance art. It's very important because, you know, capturing theater through film can be challenging, but performance art and a lot of the work that we do is very visually dramatic. And it's layered with all this sound design of you know, Spirit and Michael Ward Bergman and Natalie Jones that were part of the ensemble before that was part of this documentary. It also manages to capture something that is lesser known about me, and that's because Rodrigo saw that part of my vision was to create the intergenerational project to have my boys performing with me. And the film explores that, you know, how it is that one can parent during this very challenging age, and how do I guide my children, my two boys, Darius and Diego, because they're both bilingual. They're Spanish and English, you know, very fluent, and they perform a bilingual hip-hop poem called No Human Being Is Illegal. But how do I guide them as a father who's a performance artist, who's an activist, who's a visual artist, who's very much engaged in art and social justice? How do I guide them to understand that they have a responsibility? Because, you know, I'm part Quechua native Ecuadorian immigrant, and they're Quechua, Ecuadorian, German, little Irish, you know, hybrid little gringos of the new millennium, right? So how do I guide them in the process of parenting during this time period when, you know, there are children that are very traumatized right now because of deportations of their parents, right? Children that are born in the USA. So how do I pass upon them the idea that we have to speak up, that the job of the artist is one to remember and speak up, but also we as citizens need to make sure that we speak our voices. If we're truly going to be standing on a paper constitution that sometimes, for the most part, has had no real truth for dark people, people of color in this country, but if we're truly going to stand on it, we have to push it to all its possibilities. I want to create work that is not only hybrid and experimental in the terms of performance work that is also very visually engaging, but that has heart. It has to move people because right now our people are being dehumanized, right? No human being is illegal. I cannot make work that doesn't have that human capacity, that human understanding. And I think that's the job of the artist. Like I say in the film, I have no time. I'm not afforded any privilege to create gringo experimental theater about nothing. The work I do has to honor my people. And another big subject matter of the film is honoring the Latin American immigrants who have been a big part of our rebirth and renaissance in New Orleans post-Katrina.
And now you are changing hats as you have another project with plans to rescreen this at an upcoming concert.
We're going to be hosting the third annual Latin Music All-Stars with some amazing bands. We are taking this opportunity to rescreen the film. And we're going to have a really tight schedule because we have a night of hot, caliente music. It includes tango, it includes merengue, it includes salsa, Cuban fusions.
Tell us about the performers.
The performers include Freddie Omar, one of the great Latin Honduran crooners here who's come back and is making his revival. It includes Margie Perez performing with Sam Price and Otra. So it's going to be Cuban fusion, salsa, merengue. And then we have some new groups, Raices. Roberto Carrillo, who's part of the ensemble, has created an Andean music conjunto group that he's leading. And then we have Gauchos del Tango. We're going to be playing tango negros, black tangos, and that's Yuleni Velasquez, who's from Venezuela, and her husband Michael Ward Bergman, who's also part of the ensemble of the Taco Truck Theater that's in the documentary. It's a very exciting evening. And then the Taco Truck Theater ensemble will also perform.
That's quite a lineup.
It's Latin culture, music, Latin film, Latin people, Latin dancing. Bring out your dancing shoes. We're going to be auctioning off the works of Luis Colmenares, a brilliant sculptor, Hernan Caro, Colombian, and also Teresa Herrera, and some of the works that I've created, including one of the portraits from the Free People of Color series.
Multidisciplinary artist Jose Torres Tama, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The third annual Latin Music All-Stars Concert and the rescreening of Rodrigo Dorfman's award-winning film This Taco Truck Kills Fascist will take place at Café Istanbul, 2372 St. Claude Avenue in the Marigny, Thursday, November 29th. More info online at torrestama.com. There's a saying that today's trash could be tomorrow's treasure. And at the Green Project, that saying really does come full circle, as its mission is to divert usable materials from landfills by creatively repurposing salvaged goods. The local environmental nonprofit is gearing up for its gala, where pieces from its salvage design competition will make you do a double take. Communications and Development Manager Haley Allison is here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
This year is pretty special, as this event has been on hiatus for, I believe, 3 years. Bring us up to speed. What's going on at the Green Project?
Yeah, so it has been on hiatus for 3 years. We're bringing it back, and we want to do it better than ever. So we're at a new location. It's City Park's Arbor Room at Pop Fountain. And what makes our gala different is our salvage design competition. And so what we want to do is exemplify our mission to the community, and that is to develop a marketplace for creative reuse. So this competition calls on designers in Louisiana and the Gulf South to create furniture, lighting, and functional art, all out of at least 90% salvage materials.
Wow.
It's pretty insane what people can do with, you know, things from the garbage, from our store, from nature that they just find, and they create these beautiful pieces that we then put up for auction, and they're juried and awarded top prizes.
Now describe for us some of the creative ways local designers have repurposed these salvaged objects.
One of the really striking pieces this year is this knife that one of the designers made out of rebar, and you can see the details of the rebar, kind of the grooves, and you're able to recognize what it is, but this knife is beautiful, and it looks like a true piece of art. So that's one of the really awesome pieces this year, and it's also an award-winning piece.
What is rebar?
Rebar is a building material. It's quite often used when pouring concrete to reinforce the structure under the concrete or around it. They're long pieces of metal that are pretty raw, pretty rusty looking, and primarily not seen. They're not used for normal building or art or design. And so this piece has been polished down and created into a smooth, beautiful finish that looks truly like art. We also have a fire extinguisher turned into a lamp. We have a drill turned into a lamp that also has a touch sensor and is very modern and unique. We have a lot of wood pieces this year as well from local cypress, sinker cypress, that our designers have created into just beautiful works of art.
Tell us more about the Green Project, what you collect and what you're most proud of.
The Green Project is primarily a salvage store and an environmental nonprofit located in the Bywater. And our main mission is to collect building materials, furniture, anything that you would use to build your house and to repurpose it in new ways, and also to provide these building materials at an affordable cost to the community. We also are the first paint recycler in Louisiana, and we still maintain our paint recycling program where we collect usable paint, remix it, repackage it into new colors for the community. Our main goal is to really keep usable goods out of the landfill and to teach people that you don't have to buy brand new in order to have quality pieces of home goods, of furniture, to create your new house, and also to preserve architectural pieces in New Orleans. We collect these building materials, and a lot of them come from houses that are being restored in New Orleans, which, as we know, there's a ton of historic architecture here. And so another one of our pillars is to keep those materials in New Orleans so that we're constantly creating new things with what we have, and that lowers the impact on the environment because you need less energy to create new products when you're using products that already exist.
I believe the nonprofit is 24 this year?
24 this year, yep. Our big 25th anniversary is next year.
Do you have an idea of what you may have kept out of the landfill in this 24-year history?
On average, we've collected about 2 million pounds of materials every year. So 2 million times 24 is about where we're at.
And what is your hope, Haley, for the Green Project's future in our community?
Our hope is to really continue to engage the community. We're working on a few projects now. One is our makerspace. It's a brand new facility in our upstairs where we have stationary power tools as well as hand tools that the community can come use for free under the guidance of our reuse coordinator. So we're really trying to connect the affordable materials we have with tools that you wouldn't be able to purchase, you know, a drill press on your own just for one project. So we're really trying to link those two things so that we're a one-stop shop for people to come buy, learn, build, and then create their own home repairs or art or whatever it is that they're seeking.
And where is the Green Project located?
The Green Project is right outside the Bywater. We're at 2831 Murray Street.
Haley Allison, Communications and Development Director with the Green Project. Thanks.
Thank you.
The Green Project Salvations Gala will take place on Thursday, November 29th at City Park's Arbor Room at Pop Fountain. More info at thegreenproject.org. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.